Wonderful. Thank you so much. Will you join me now in prayer? Spirit of wisdom, one who reaches us and teaches us with the unexpected, the invisible, the unfamiliar, the barely perceived, that which is beyond our understanding. Help keep us open, free, and available for you to reach us. If all we have known of you and of church is pain, help us to be open to new feelings and new visions of you. Grant us an abiding awareness of your presence, moving in us, around us, and through us. And may the words that come from my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be wonderful and beautiful in your sight. In your many holy names we pray. Amen. So this is the first Sunday of our second summer sermon series, Animals of the Bible. And there are so many animals in the Bible. I think this fact is important and should not be overlooked. I think Sandy and I are in a race to name all of them. I think she's ahead right now. Animals teach us respect for life and provide a special enjoyment and appreciation of the diversity of creation. If only we pay attention to them, if only we listen to the feelings that we experience when we invite them into our lives. St. Francis of Assisi rejoiced in the beauty that all animals bring to creation. They add life to our life. But even more than that, they can indeed teach us many things about the Creator and about ourselves. Now, one of the many things that I enjoy about a sermon series is that it often takes us to places that we might otherwise not go and teaches us things that we might otherwise not know. It takes us to the unexpected places, and the passage from Numbers today is a great example. The story of Balaam's ass doesn't appear in the Revised.
You love saying that.
Y'all surprised me. We are wonderful children. The story of Balaam's ass doesn't appear in the Revised Common Lectionary and would only be encountered by a preacher wandering off that well-worn path, although whispers of the story created great amusement and curiosity among we children who happened to hear our church elders discussing Balaam's talking ass. So today, I wanted to approach this as a donkey might. Now, a rabbi once asked, how do donkeys read the Bible? The answer is, they look for stories about donkeys. Now, that is just as women look for stories about women, and people in the GLBTIQQ communities look for stories about our gay, lesbian, bi, and trans siblings. And yes, we are in there. And we can find us if we are the ones who look for us. Now, there's so many good donkey stories in the Bible, and there's so many places where they play significant supporting roles. Carrying the wounded traveler for the Good Samaritan. Or when the brothers of Joseph went to feed their animals and discovered the silver that they had paid for their food returned to them in the fodder for their donkeys. Or Abraham's donkey, who carried wood for the place upon which his own son would lay in a sacrificial offering to Yahweh before having his hand stopped by an angel, a messenger of God. Or Saul, who went in search of lost donkeys. And when he did, he encountered the prophet of God, Samuel. Samuel, who anointed him to be the first king, the first ruler of Israel. And the jawbone of a deceased donkey being used as a weapon with which Samuel slayed 1,000 Philistines. Now, and while we don't know that Mary rode a donkey into Bethlehem, we do know that she was heavy with child and that she was nearing the end of her pregnancy, and it would have been a very long walk. So it's a good assumption that she was riding a donkey. And countless paintings and Christmas cards and carols have made it so. Jesus rode a donkey, a foal, a young donkey into Jerusalem. Rulers would frequently ride into a city on a donkey as a sign of them coming in peace. So, in a way, Jesus likely rode a donkey into the city of his birth, and about 33 years later, rode a donkey into the city of his death. Now, I always thought it would make a wonderful children's story to have the foal that he rode into Jerusalem be the grand foal of the donkey that Mary rode into Bethlehem, and to have the story be told as a part of the conversation unfolding between the two of them, even referencing a distant ancestor, one who belonged to a prophet named Balaam. Maybe one day I'll write that story. But for now, if I were a donkey, I think I would go for the story of the talking donkey. Balaam's ass. And you know there are only two Bible stories that feature a talking animal. This is one. What's the other? Y'all are sad. What is the other animal?
The snake.
Yes, the snake. Very good. B plus C. We'll work on that. It is a snake, the only two talking animals. So, to provide you with a little backstory here, Balaam was a non-Israelite. He was a non-Hebrew, and yet he was a prophet of Yahweh. Now, remember, the Middle East at that time, and indeed today, was filled with all different types of people. Jews, Arabs, Bedouins, just to name a few. And now, as was then, not all of them get along very well. Balaam was known as a prophet and largely regarded as not a very good man. Now, some of that's because the victors wrote the history, but some of that is also due to his own nature. He brought a lot of his reputation upon himself. He seemed a bit greedy, with an eye sharp for his own interests. And while he blessed people in the name of Yahweh, he was also known for cursing people in the name of Yahweh. And it was said that those whom he blessed stayed blessed, and those whom he cursed stayed cursed. And in the process of all that blessing and cursing, well, you can be pretty sure that there was some money exchanging hands somewhere. Now, our story begins when the king of Moab becomes alarmed because suddenly he has all of these foreigners entering his kingdom. All of these refugees practically wandering across the borders into his kingdom. And he's concerned because they seem to be everywhere, taking up space, taking good jobs, using up resources, and probably even committing crimes. And so he calls upon Balaam to curse them, so that he might be able to defeat them in battle. Because goodness, they'd already defeated two kings, and he was a little bit worried. A rowdy bunch, these people, these wandering people. But when the king summoned Balaam, Balaam sent word back that Yahweh had instructed him in a dream not to go and do this. Well, rulers, kings, potentates, and dictators don't take no for an answer very easily. And so the king of Moab sent higher-ranking officials, long robes, ambassadors, heads of state, heads of intelligence agencies, and plied honors for Balaam, if he will only curse these people. And also pretty sure there was an implication of some money and wealth and riches. Balaam asked Yahweh again, Can I go? Please. Well, the story goes that God finally relented to Balaam. Oh, go on. Just go. But told Balaam only to say what he was told to say by Yahweh. Yahweh would put words into his mouth. So Balaam sets out. Now, the encroaching refugees were none other than the Israelites fleeing the bondage of Egypt. Like the poem by Warsan Shire, no one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark or the barrel of a gun. For Hebrews, home was a place of enslavement, one that they left not simply seeking a better life, but just to live life and a chance to live freely. Here in this story, they were nearing the end of their 40 years in the wilderness, led by Moses shortly before his death. Now, we are told God became very angry that Balaam up and went off to see the king of Moab to discuss the cursings of these people. Yet, God had told Balaam that he could go. That was then, last night, and this is now, the next day. So a lot of ink has been spilled in commentaries in an attempt to explain that seeming contradiction, that change of mind, that fickle nature. Or a question, did Balaam really, really hear God relent? Or was it just that he really, really wanted to hear it? Sometimes we really want to hear things so bad. Regardless, on the way to the king of Moab's place, an angel, a messenger of God, blocks the path. Balaam can't see it, but his little donkey can. And so she steers him away from the danger. This field over here looks real nice and safe. But what does she get for trying to save him? She gets beaten. What a horrible thing to do. This cruelty to an animal reveals to me a lot about Balaam's character. Again it happens, trying to protect him, and again Balaam beats and whips her. And the third time, when the little donkey could see no way around, no safe way to pass with her human cargo, she kneels. She lays down. She refuses to move. For this, Balaam, enraged, beat her severely. Now, how on earth was Yahweh going to get Balaam's attention? To stop doing that and to listen and look, open his eyes. Balaam, greedy, cruel, angry Balaam, and stubborn as an ass. There is only one way. The donkey is given the ability to speak. OMG. What would our animals say if they could speak? Well, those of us who have animals and those of us who work with animals would probably tell us that they actually do talk to us. Some just don't seem to listen very well. And like Balaam's donkey, animals have reasons for doing the things that they do, although we humans may not always see those reasons. This little she-donkey simply says, "What have I done to you to make you beat me three times?" Out of all the things that she could have said. I know if I were that donkey, I could think of some. From her perspective, she has gotten beaten for no reason. She doesn't know that Balaam is unable to see what she sees. What have I done to you that you cause me pain? What a simple and beautiful plea. Sometimes I am like that little donkey, and I hear that in my head when someone hurts me, when I have done nothing but to try and help them. Then the fact that Balaam then begins an argument with his donkey, it doesn't say much for his intelligence and his situational awareness. He replies loudly, "You made a fool out of me." Perhaps that's the thing that power fears most of all. Being laughed at or made a fool of. Balaam then said that he was so upset that if he were armed with a sword, he would kill her right there. This vehicle, his very means of transportation. That is what being both angry and short-sighted does to a person. The donkey goes on, "You know me. We've always ridden together, haven't we? Have I ever done this before?" With this, Balaam's eyes are opened, and he saw the barrier he was facing, the messenger with the sword. The hazard that his donkey could not warn him about, other than braying and hee-hawing, and could only keep Balaam safe from harm by trying to avoid the danger, which to Balaam looked a lot like disobedience rather than salvation. Simply because he did not know all of the facts, did not have the full story, could not see anything beyond his donkey. His ears were not open. His eyes were not open. He was on his own determined path. And the messenger tells Balaam that his path is reckless. And why? Why did you beat your donkey? She was protecting you, you idiot. And had she not protected you, I surely would have killed you. But get this, Balaam, I would have spared her. She is the only ass I would have saved here today. Balaam is then sent on his way with instructions once more to speak only the words that Yahweh places into his mouth. Now, ultimately, in the presence of the king of Moab, all Balaam could do was to bless the refugees, the Israelites. He did that several times, even though the king of Moab asked him to curse them. He did, however, end up offering some very shrewd advice to the king, advice that later turned out badly for the Israelites. And thus we are told that Balaam ended badly as a result, dying during a battle by a sword. Now it is up to us to listen in story and in prayer through the words and the wisdom of others, to be all ears, to listen and to learn from those whom we don't expect, to listen to what the donkeys in our lives tell us, to listen to the donkeys speak, not to beat them, but to listen to what they have to teach us. The Bible is a collection of stories of an ancient people trying to comprehend their relationship to a God that they did not understand. A God like, unlike any other gods that they were familiar with. And if the Bible teaches us anything, it should teach us that God consistently uses outsiders, the marginalized, those whom you would least expect to be the vehicles for wisdom and salvation. And it is always to our ultimate demise that we ignore them. How does God get your attention? Think of the people in your life, people all around you, people who suddenly behave in ways unfamiliar to you. The people who zig when you want them to zag. Instead of being angry, instead of trying to beat them at their own game, pause instead to see what they have to teach you. What they have to teach you. God often gets our attention through the unexpected. So be open to learning something new, seeking the answer to one more thing that you do not know. To do that always keeps you open to the unknown and the unexpected. In closing, Martin Luther in the year 1517 was known to have had some issues with the Catholic Church. Well, at least 95 of them, to be exact. He loved the story of Balaam and once said, God spoke through the mouth of an ass against the prophet who was writing it. Therefore, no one should be despised. No one's voice is unimportant. Keep your eyes open. Keep your ears open. Keep yourself open to the unknown and the unexpected. And remember, animals have feelings. Hee-haw.